You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
To try to not pick up a drink or drug. Welcome, everybody. Glad you're back. We're excited because we are now on the internet. So if you want to tell family and friends that live where Jane's from, Alaska, they can get on the internet at www.1400amweoa.com. That's 1400amweoa.com. So that is very exciting for the pump to be national and international now on the website. Anyway, my guest this morning is a dear friend of mine, probably one of my best friends that I've grown to love and feel very close to over the past few years in her journey of recovery. Her name is Jane, and she shouts from the rooftops her excitement about being clean and sober, and she's also very candid and honest about the challenges of being clean and sober, that it's not always easy. It might be simple, but there's challenges. She's a mother of two wonderful sons. She talks about the challenge of parenting for all of you parents out there. So I think we're on to hear a wonderful story today of experience, strength, and hope from my friend Jane. Jane, thanks for coming.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
I'm grateful to be able to come here and share my experience. I never thought that, you know, we talked about this in a meeting, that I never understood introducing myself as Jane, a grateful alcoholic. I couldn't understand when people would say that in one sentence and put that together. Now I get it. I am grateful that I found the fellowship of AA and that it has taught me the principles in which to try to live my life. You know, it's not a perfect journey, but I do the best that I can, you know.
Yes, you do, and it shows, and you never hesitate to talk and to listen. Jane's a nurse. I'm a social worker, so we keep joking that one of these days we're going to put our disciplines together and take our show on the road.
Really?
You,
our
the medical
road show.
You, the pharmacological perspective.
So, well, I think we have. I mean, we can bring both both entities together, because you know there is a blend in it for sure.
Yes, and I was just. Benny's Flooring does my floors, and I was just in there today because I want to get my second floor carpeted. So I was in there talking to Benny, and we were just talking about how this affects families and just the pharmacological, how available medications are, and how this really is a health-related issue.
Absolutely. It's the alcoholism is the third most preventable that people die from, preventable disease that people succumb to,
yeah,
is alcoholism. You know, we just talked in our meeting this morning. Thank God this is the disease that I got, because my medicine is going to a meeting and sharing with other alcoholics and having a sponsor that I can be honest with, reading the literature of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's my treatment. You know,
so
I don't have to have a surgical procedure or chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm. It's more
well.
Spiritual, psychological.
Absolutely.
Healing.
I did sober in my adult life just without Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was hell. And once I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous some 2 years ago, and became willing to listen and to do add the component of spirituality, that and the fellowship is what I really give all the credit to my sobriety for.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, when I finally decided, God, please help me, I found myself at an AA meeting. And as a result of going to many, many AA meetings, you know, I found a higher power that I have to turn my life over to and know that there's a plan, and I may not, you know, always understand it, but I have to have faith in it.
So how did a nice girl like you end up in the rooms of an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting?
What's your story? Golly, my friends are probably laughing if you call me a nice girl like me. They know me as sarcastic and rebellious. But how did I end up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous?
Were you born and raised in Evansville?
I was born and raised in Evansville, and you know, lived I had a good childhood, really. I can't blame my parents or my upbringing, you know, at all on my disease. I just couldn't, in spite of how things looked on the outside, and going through school really without any difficulty, being athletic. Wasn't enough for me, and I never felt okay enough. And once I found what alcohol could do for me, it took off.
So even though you had all the external kudos, something inside just didn't feel like it measured up.
Absolutely, and what you commonly hear in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, that my fellows come into the rooms with a hole in our soul. Mm-hmm. You know, I sit in rooms with people that are doctors, lawyers, judges, who are wealthy and who are homeless, and it doesn't matter. It's, you know, the pain of addiction puts us all on an equal playing field. You know, we're all the same. And it seems like the common problem leads us to the common solution. So, you know, it really doesn't matter what the outside looks like. Although most of my life, you know, I was conditioned to make sure everything on the outside looked a certain way. And, you know, it's kind of funny because when I first came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and when I started getting honest with people, it seemed like what I would hear often is, I didn't know you drank that much, or who knew that you had a problem. You know, mm-hmm. We're so good at deceiving people closest to us. But, you know, the outside, comparing our insides to your outsides, you know, the lie that almost killed me was trying to tell mm-hmm. people that I was fine when on the inside I was dying on the inside. The hole couldn't get filled up enough.
That is an incredible lie, isn't it?
It is.
To say, I'm okay, whenever anybody asks, how are you? Well, I'm just fine.
And that's our conditioned response. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we don't feel safe enough to, if I told you my real truth, that I'm dying inside, you know, who would really care? Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of where your mind is in the hollows of your addiction. So, you know,
you really don't think people care.
So you tell people I'm fine.
And you don't really believe they care anyway.
Absolutely.
At the whole.
No. Yeah.
Yeah, because Marvelline said that a couple weeks ago. Robert and Edda said that last week. There is this, really, do I trust that people care deep mm-hmm. down? Mm-hmm. That's part of that whole.
It's a whole. It's a spiritual bankruptcy, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm. You tried to use alcohol and drugs to fill that up?
I tried to use alcohol and drugs to use that up to the best of my ability.
You gave it a heck of a try, didn't you?
I went to any lengths to fill that up.
To fill that hole.
And, you know, I did the geographic cure in 1987. I knew that my disease was spinning out of control here to the point where, you know, my whole family's here, and I really didn't want to have them see me where I was headed. So I took an opportunity to move to the, you know, as far away as I could get. So
for sure.
I went to Alaska thinking I'd get a clean start, and it took 3 months to find the people who were like me and to start back down that same road. The problem with that geographic cure is mm-hmm. that I took me with me, mm-hmm. and I really couldn't run from the me that was inside. I don't care where I went. I went to Alaska. I went to Hawaii. I went all over to try to fix me. And the fix wasn't to move. It was to look well within myself, honestly.
So when you went to Alaska, did it escalate because no one was watching?
Absolutely. I had no anchors, really. Mm-hmm. I had no one that I had to stay clean and sober for, or to make sure that I didn't run into in mm-hmm. public. You know, I was 5,000 miles away from Evansville. I was at the top of the world. And but like I said, it took me 3 months to find the people who were like me and to get into that crowd. And you know, all I had to do was make an obligatory phone call every Sunday and fabricate how great my life was going.
To your family?
To my family.
So your parents had no
clue? No, they had no idea. You know, on the phone, I was great.
Yeah, yeah.
I was thriving. Mm-hmm. And in reality, I was running with
the wolves.
The worst of the worst. Mm-hmm. And it caught up with me. So
did you know throughout this course that you were not drinking moderately or using cocaine moderately?
Yes.
So you knew you were living
a
lie.
Yes, I knew. You know, that's one of the things that I think still having some, you know, some brain cells that were working, I knew that I was drinking alcoholically, that I was using addictively. But I just couldn't get honest with it. I tried all those mm-hmm. Experiments to try to control and to try to drink like others or use like, you know, there isn't really no social cocaine use that's acceptable. But I tried to drink like others, and boy, you know, there was a wide discrepancy between how I drank and how other people drank.
So you ended up associating with other people that drank like you drank.
For sure.
Well, that compulsion.
And when I wasn't with, you know, not necessarily, I mean, up there I did. Here, when I moved back home, you know, no, I didn't, you know, my circle of friends aren't alcoholic, mm-hmm. really. I would hide how I drank in front of those people.
What a life.
Mm-hmm.
So you had friends and family that, it's like you had this big secret.
Yes, a huge secret.
So no one knew.
No one knew.
But you knew.
My sons knew, and, mm-hmm. you know, thank God we don't get what we deserve, because mm-hmm. if we got what we deserve, I would never have mm-hmm. the most precious gifts that I could have in my two boys. I don't deserve them. And I'm grateful I have them. However, my sons being raised in an alcoholic home, you know, they got to see it in living color. And
Do you worry about them picking up alcohol or mood altering chemical?
Yes. Just from learning, being in your draft, I know that they're four times more likely to the alcoholic addicts having two parents that are.
Mm-hmm. Just the biology.
The biology. Ooh. But, you know, they are a huge part of my recovery. Mm-hmm. And since I've been sober, you know, I have been as honest with them and as candid with them as I can be. You know, I'm not naive to the fact that, you know, they're 17 and 19, but I know that they have, you know, being children of alcoholics, I think they have reservations.
Mm-hmm.
And they're educated.
Definitely.
And for the grace of God, there is Alcoholics Anonymous, and this fellowship must go on in case my kids need to come in those rooms someday.
Mm-hmm. There can't be any harder job in the world than parenting. And, you know, I was telling you about Jennifer on the way here, talking to my friend, our friend, Jennifer,
yeah.
and the issues with her child and just parenting, Therese and her daughter. Do you think it's different with having teenage boys or young adult boys than it would be having girls?
Well, I always laugh and say I'm so glad that I got boys.
Yeah.
I think boys are easier.
Well, a man that's a drunk is still called a man. A woman that's a drunk is called
anything but a woman.
That's true. That's for sure the stigma with girls and women that have problems or are on the streets.
Yeah.
Have a tougher road to hoe, no doubt about it. And then another parent wrote me today and said, oh my, have your guests talk about the parenting part of...
Well, like I said, I was blessed with two amazing guys.
Mm-hmm.
And
but you've watched women you sponsor and people mm-hmm. you sponsor with their kids.
You know, they want to be a part of my recovery. They support me in my early recovery when I was going to, you know, sometimes two meetings a day and being absent from home. Even when I was... As compared to when I was home and drinking when I wasn't present mm-hmm. for them, my dear friend who told me I needed something that got me into my first AA meeting said that night that I needed to be present for my children. I'll never forget that. And, you know, I was with my children, but I was not present for my children.
Mm.
And in early recovery, when I would go to a lot of meetings, you know, they were so happy I was going to meetings, and mm-hmm. I would come home well every night. And, you know, it's mm-hmm. a living amends with them every day that I stay sober, every day that I choose to do something different
mm-hmm.
is making amends for the way they had to see me.
So when an addict, alcoholic in the family gets clean and sober, the whole family reaps the reward.
The whole family reaps. Well, the whole family
The ripple effect is amazing.
When there is a common thing that we hear in the rooms is that I was only hurting myself, but the truth is, you know, we're a tornado that wreaks havoc on anyone who has the misfortune of having to be close to us.
Mm-hmm.
You
have to get sober to see that, though.
Yes, you have to get sober to see that. And, you know, I'm grateful that they can tell me, that they have in the past 2 years, my sons have told me candidly, reminded me. It's not fun to hear the things mm-hmm. that I did while I was impaired. That's not a...
Good conversation.
Painful.
Yeah,
it's painful, but it's necessary. It's humbling, and it's just a good reminder that, you know, today I'm sober.
And, you know, with your boys, just like you, you've worked the program, and that's had a ripple effect on them. They don't say anything to hurt you.
Mm-mm.
They say it maybe in humor, in love, to remind you, but I've never seen them want to be vicious with you about it.
No.
And that's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, working in the family's life, for sure. Because a lot of kids can't wait to attack their parents for every flaw they have, you know.
Well, you know what? Another thing that has been so great with the boys is that they've come to know my whole new family of friends in AA.
Mm-hmm.
You.
Mm-hmm.
My first sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
All of the people that come into the rooms that... You know, it really has taken away what they may have had in their mind of who arrives at AA.
Right.
A lot of the general public think that people in AA meetings are bums from
right.
under a bridge drinking out of a brown paper sack. It has been great for my sons to see that an alcoholic looks like me, looks like mm-hmm. you, looks like their classmates.
Absolutely.
There is no, it doesn't discriminate.
That's right.
All races, creeds, colors, genders.
That's right.
And I'm grateful. I mean, my boys are pretty open-minded as a rule prior mm-hmm. to me getting sober, but this is just another dimension of their acceptance that, you know, I think that it has lended them to be better friends to their friends who might be headed down this road.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they see women that I sponsor that are their age,
Yeah.
And, you know, it breaks that stereotypical
rule
that
you're too teenagers.
Young. They're too young to be an alcoholic. Mm. Well, no one's too young.
Not. Yeah.
No one's too old. No one's too, you know, they say that you're
too educated, too poor,
you know, I'm too smart. Well, you can't be too smart.
No, no. Smart enough to know we're not so smart.
Right.
Okay, don't go away, Radio Rehab. We are going to come back and continue our conversation with Jane. If you want to call and ask any questions, nothing's below the belt, 424-1400, please do, or 888-846-7867. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're talking to my friend Jane that has been happily clean and sober in the program of AA for a couple of years now, and she was just sharing with us how she got here, her geographical cures and all those things that she had going for her couldn't stop the progression of alcoholism. But now she's clean and sober for quite a long time. So we were just talking at break about families and about the diversity of the 12-step programs and how that apparently meant something to you coming into AA, that it wasn't just all one kind of people.
It continues to mean a great amount to me that when you go into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, it doesn't matter if you came from Park Avenue or a park bench. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. It's a room of people, as it says in our big book, that normally wouldn't mix. Mm-hmm. And in that room, we know that, you know, we are survived. Narrowly escaped a tragic death, and we need each other. You know, it's our tradition.
Yes, and it's amazing how,
you know, the group. It's not the individual. It's the group must survive. And
yes.
You know, we either get well together or we fall apart. And
Those of you in the listening audience, there's about 140 AA meetings in Evansville now.
Yeah, we're
week.
So lucky that way.
People could get to an AA meeting no matter what time of day or anything.
Yeah.
So what do you tell a newcomer when they say, AA, why would I want to go to AA? That's a bunch of alcoholics.
Well, I just say, you know, I don't try to convince them.
Right.
You have to be willing
to go. The willingness.
And a lot of people come in and they're, you know, their ears are still, they still try to find the differences, how they don't fit in.
Mm-hmm.
But once you're broken enough and you are able to be willing and to hear, it breaks down those barriers. I don't try to convince them. I encourage them to come with and try it on.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people like to distinguish, I'm not an alcoholic, I'm an addict. And, you know, that's okay. AA
as long as you have a desire to not drink.
AA accepts everyone.
Yes.
I've never seen anybody kicked out of an AA meeting, you know, for
no.
not being purely alcoholic, although that is our roots, but
that's our singleness of purpose for sure. But yeah, anymore, you don't see anybody come in as a newcomer that just drank.
Right, right, right. I mean, all our stories are pretty sordid.
Yeah.
But you know, you're talking about how fortunate we are in our area to have so many meetings. You know, in the past 2 years, having been on, you know, a few trips, I find AA meetings wherever I go,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't matter if I'm in Florida, if I'm in Hawaii,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't matter. I can walk into the rooms, and I find people just like
Absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely.
And there's
unity. And you're quite a usher for AA when people call you and want to go or want to join or are curious to see it. You do attract a lot of the younger people, Jane. How do you get young people attracted to AA? Because, oh my God, the ones I know and that I talk to that are trying to get clean and sober just think AA is so boring.
Well, I think it's necessary that they can find people of their own age, and it's just sharing my experience in the meetings that I go to that have a fair amount of younger people. I think that's necessary for them to have their own peer group.
Yeah.
But, you know, once they succumb to coming into the rooms and they see for themselves mm-hmm. that it doesn't matter. I know my dear friend who's going off to the Navy is, when I met her, she was 17.
Yeah, Devin, she was here, remember?
And,
she came on the show.
She was 17 and, you know.
She was in high school.
Right. And when I met her and found out she was 17, I couldn't believe it. Because she had so much.
She already
to
had a year.
Share.
Yeah.
And at such a young age, she guided me through many rough waters. And it doesn't matter. A 17-year-old can relate to, you know, an old 40-year-old.
That's right. Their bottom is the same.
That's
bottom's
right.
Bottom.
They're not unique.
Yeah.
We all, it just took her a shorter amount of time to get there.
How old were you when you started drinking heavily and drugging?
You know, I think I was in my mid-20s when it became a problem. I moved away from Evansville in 1987. I think I was 25.
So you'd already gone through some of the developmental stages of adolescence before you had some maturity, in other words, or at least the age.
A little bit
aged
of experience
up.
Under my belt, yeah.
Yeah. So did you become addicted very quickly?
Very quickly. Very
Women
quickly.
Do get addicted quicker
Women
than
get
men.
There faster.
Yeah. So right off the bat, your drinking and drug use became...
Well, I knew when I put that first drink or drug in my body that it sure made me feel...
Magical.
It made me feel more comfortable around people. I always felt less than. Like I, you know, I couldn't be okay enough. I hung with a variety of different people.
And had
you know,
all the external
the cheerleader
kudos, yeah.
And was on honor roll and played soccer and swam on swim team. I did all those things.
Wow.
And still there was something in me that was missing.
Always.
Mm-hmm. Always.
So is that something parents can feed a child early in life? Or are some of us just a few bricks short of a load? I've always wondered, and I know science since the beginning of Adam's and Eve's kids killing each other has tried to figure out human behavior, but I wonder why some just never feel that wholeness inside, where your siblings from the same parents, same rules, same seem to do okay in life. Do you think when you look at you and your siblings or your parents, or is there anything that you feel parents could have done to prevent that hole in your soul?
No, I my parents did the best they knew how to do with me. You know, they sure afforded me a lot of privileges, and
my parents did too, but they weren't really available emotionally for me. I don't think it was their fault.
Well, I don't know.
But
we've talked about this, you and I. I mean, I don't know if it was a generational thing.
Well, that could be too. They were busy.
They
working.
You know, that generation, I did see another friend of mine's mom, who was a single mom, raise her children with this unconditional love that I wasn't familiar with. I always felt that I had to, you know, if I did a certain thing, that the love would be taken away from me. Mm-hmm. That they wouldn't love me if I didn't succeed. And I saw my friend's mom just love them in spite of whatever they came with.
And there was a difference?
And I was very attracted to that. And I've tried to raise my voice that way and remind them at every turn, there is nothing in this world that will make me not love you. Nothing.
Mm,
and I will always be here.
That unconditional love.
And I think that as a parent, it's necessary. And they can see that they don't have to be perfect, that they can make mistakes and I'm still going to be there for them. I was afraid to make mistakes growing up. I needed to know that I was still in their good graces always.
I thought
and
I was a mistake.
And that's why I did. I isolate and want to get the hell out of Evansville because I didn't want to have them see me messing
making
up.
A mistake. Mm-hmm. Cleaning up the messes of life. But you were able to super achieve on the outside.
On the outside,
right. So
that was a real big message for me growing up that we had to look a certain
good.
Way. We sat in the first pew at church,
No,
you know,
kidding.
Hair was never, you know, never out of place. We attended.
No kidding.
You know, we were always at and seen in a certain. It was very important, that message to me, to make sure the outside looked okay, and the inside wasn't really open for discussion. There wasn't a lot of feelings and discussions in my home growing up about really checking in with somebody. How are you doing? What's going on?
When I see
deviations from my kids, I have seen them go through whatever they have gone through in their young lives. I can tell when there's a different behavior, and you have to check in and you have to be persistent, because normally kids are not going to want to be an open book. But
authenticity is pretty important to young people.
Mm-hmm.
Who did you feel you could be real with in your life? Like, I had my sister Shirley, who was, oh my God, my hero. I'd do anything to be like her, and she was my role model. Did you have a female that was a go-to person for you? Who helped you become the woman that you are?
Well, I mean, my parents certainly supported me the way they could.
Right.
In my late teen years, I was very close to my sister. However,
like,
she's
older.
She's 2 years older than me. However, as I just alluded to, Sally's mom is the one who taught me unconditional love, and I really gravitated to that family. I spent when I met her, I spent as much time as I could possibly spend at her house, and so she was a tremendous role model for me. She was a single mom, and she was raising these five kids. She was exceptional. She still is an exceptional woman.
Had somebody.
She was a nurse, and she just loved her kids, and it wasn't an easy road for her. So.
Yeah, there's probably not any one or two points we can look back to, but there is that common denominator of every one of us with an addictive disorder, or within the rooms anyway, that had that emptiness inside, that hole in the soul.
And it's really, you know, I have my best friend in the world, you know, she's been so supportive in my recovery, and we can only explain it, you know, they can only understand to a certain degree, but I can talk to you, and you know, you understand exactly what I'm going through, that emptiness and what alcohol did for us.
Right.
Until it turned on us. You know,
yes.
People try to understand as best they can, but it's really hard for them to know, you know, why after waking up from yet another blackout or being sick for a week from probably alcohol poisoning, why you would try it again, and why, you know, if it turned on you like that. The people who aren't like us don't understand that.
No, I loved, you gave me a CD to listen to, Mickey. I loved what she said about had to go out for a loaf of bread as the excuse to get drunk and not come home for 3 days. And the kids, why didn't you come home? You don't love us. And how she had to explain to them, no, I didn't come home because I do love you.
Right.
I didn't want you around me.
And I loved what she said. And I that made such an impression on me.
Me too.
When she said, there is nothing stronger than a mother's love for her children.
That's right.
Except
alcoholism. God, that's for sure.
Because when I, my son, before I got sober, it was one of those moments that makes my throat close up when I have to tell that story. But in one of the bottles that I had hidden, he put a sticky note on the bottle of vodka and said, "Mom, please don't do this."
Wow.
And that wasn't enough for me.
That wasn't your last drink.
That wasn't my last drunk. And there isn't, you know, when I would tell them, you know, I can't do this anymore, you know, I meant it. Wasn't telling them a lie. I wasn't trying to get over on them. I meant it.
Yeah.
That I'm not going to do this again. And, you know, children believe you.
So do parents.
And
They believe so it when you say never again, those mm-hmm. broken promises.
But it wasn't as if we were lying to them intentionally.
No,
we
no.
really mean it when we tell the people that love us that, you know, it's going to be better, I'm going to change.
Because for the minute, we really believe we can do that.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, for some strange reason of this disease, we can't remember the incomprehensible demoralization that happens. But 12 hours before, every morning I would wake up. Because in the end of my drinking career, blackouts were a regular basis for me. And every morning I would wake up thinking, I am not going to drink today.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did, I would have that feeling, I don't even want to do this. Why am I I don't want to drink. But I could not pull back the humiliation, the sickness, the incomprehensible demoralization. It's the best way of describing it.
And it drinks all that'll get rid of it.
Mm-hmm. I would drink over to get rid of that memory.
Yeah, what's that saying? Why do you drink? Because I feel guilty. Why do you feel guilty?
Because I drink. Right.
That vicious circle.
Mm-hmm. Until we're ready to concede, like it says in the big book, to our innermost self, that
so that's what it really takes.
This disease has me.
And we what you're saying is we have to see that truth before wellness can even enter the picture.
And for me, I'm grateful that it came and I had mm-hmm. that spiritual experience.
Was that the first time you had tried to get sober?
No, I did.
Dry times?
I did 4 years. Two
Whoa.
Years once and 4 years another time, sober Whoa. Without a program. But that morning, November 10th, that I said, God, please help me.
There you
are. I've not had that compulsion to drink since then. And life doesn't quit happening. You know, with everyone in sobriety, we go through things that aren't easy. My friend Jennifer just went through a terrible time, and she didn't drink over it.
Mm-hmm.
We hear stories of people who go through death, divorce, bankruptcy, suicide in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, losing jobs, just everyday life things, and they don't drink over it.
Well, let's hold off so that our sponsors can have a second here and come back and talk about sobriety and recovery and how that's been. Again, we're talking to Jane. If you want to call 424-1400, please do. Call questions, text them, send them to the radio station. We want to be here to answer any questions you might have. We'll be right back.
Anything?
Well, we are back. Hello, Radio Rehab. Talking Jane. Exciting hearing about her recovery. We may even have a caller already, do we? Hello?
Hey, how y'all doing? My name's LaTanya.
Hey, LT.
LaTanya!
Hey, how you girls doing?
Good.
I was listening to you all, and I was listening about the parent deal, about, you know, how sometimes we think our parents could have did a different thing or whatever. And I was glad to hear Jane say that, you know, a lot of times we ain't even our parents, because, you know, our parents don't usually raise us to do the things that we did. But that, you know, like she said, with our kids and things, they always still love us, but because we don't know what that is, we don't know that they do. I think that's something that's very important for people to understand, especially when y'all talking about the young people that think nobody cares about them and things like that. But anyway, other than that, I'm just glad to hear you, girl. I just thought I'd call you and say hello.
Thanks, LT. You know, you're a huge part of my recovery, and I see what you do with your son, and he's a part of your recovery, and I think that, you know, we all must get well together, the people who we love. Every day that we stay sober is showing them that we can do this life clean and sober, and we're doing the best we can. I love you, LT.
I love you, too.
LaTanya, it's time for you to come back on.
Yeah, I hear you.
And visit with us. Bring that son of yours.
Just call me, Lisa.
I'll call you. Love you.
Okay, love y'all too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. The parenting part has got to be one of your main challenges in sobriety. What is sobriety like for you? Is it real different to be clean and sober?
It's just a life that I never thought I could have. That I can, because I lived in deceit for so long, mm-hmm. Being able to just come forward and have my life really an open book. There are parts of me that, I don't shout from the rooftops about, but if somebody asks me, I will be honest with them,
mm-hmm.
which is, a new thing for me.
That's a new frontier for emotionally honest, especially.
Exactly, and I've got, a dear friend that I work with, and, I used to hide my AA literature at work, but, I think that if somebody sees that I'm trying to get sober a day at a time, it may just encourage them, open the door.
Sure. Didn't somebody at work, it did open the door, knowing you were in recovery?
There are a lot of people that that are
curious about this recovery
thing.
Yes,
that I work with.
Huh.
Yeah.
So what have been some of your major challenges in getting clean and sober and staying clean and sober? A lot of people can get clean and sober.
Well,
but
there are a lot of firsts, in recovery. Your first holiday season sober, your first mm-hmm. concert sober, your first
date sober.
Exactly. Your first relationship mm-hmm. sober. But you just learn that God will give you what you need, and you don't need to have something, put something in your body to experience life. And I have a life that I never thought I'd have. I can be authentic with people, and people know me mm-hmm. and know when I'm not doing well. And I've had some times in recovery that I've succumbed to depression. And I didn't have to drink or drug over it.
And did you ever think about it?
No.
Not through the whole depression?
No.
That's
the miracle of it. I didn't want necessarily to be alive during those times, but I didn't want to drink over it. Mm-hmm. And now I can, when people, the handful of people that are really close to me know, they mm-hmm. know my
symptoms.
Eyes, they know mm-hmm. If I'm not myself, that something's going on. And I'm grateful for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, the whole depression is a whole other issue to treat. And then, like we were talking before the show, some of the ways to treat depression, even medically, cause weight gain, side effects, sleeplessness, moodiness of a different kind, all those side effects. And you've been a trooper and gone through all of that. With faith.
I don't know
you've kicked and screamed, of course, but you've had faith that somebody knows what they're talking about, and I'm going to get through this depression too.
Well, and you're that person for me, and if it weren't for you, I wouldn't have found the avenues that I have found to seek help for depression. I would have tried to manage it as kind of like how we do. We think we can keep everything under control. Thank God.
You have willingness, though, Wilson. We have to tell the audience that I nicknamed her Wilson when Julie was still alive, our dear friend that we miss terribly that was your first sponsor. We named her Wilson because if you saw the movie Castaway, Wilson was the ball in the middle of the ocean that survived the plane crash from FedEx. So we always said Jane reminds us of Wilson. She's that ball in the middle of the mass ocean of challenge and waves and sharks, but dolphins too. And she's just out there floating, riding those waves. And that is you, and you're willing to stay above the water. That willingness, how'd you get that? Why can't more? Can you sell that? Bottle that up. We could be millionaires, that willingness.
When you feel like you're at, you know, I think truly you have to hit a bottom.
Even with depression?
Even with depression. Because I fought it for several months.
That damn pride.
Mm-hmm.
Our pride.
And when you finally will surrender that you need something beyond yourself. You know,
but
it's
then
higher...
some of the solutions for depression are depressing.
Yeah.
You know, some of the side effects of the medication.
Oh my God.
You know,
two tons of fun.
Having to get sunlight all the time. Oh Lord, that's a whole other thing.
Yes,
you're a
it
trooper.
Is. But you know, even that issue, you can go into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and no matter what you're going through, someone else has experienced it. They will tell you how they got through it.
That's true.
And that you too can survive this. It's, you know, we have this terminal uniqueness. We think we're the only ones who are going, I'm the only one who had this experience at work. I'm the only one who's got this experience with my family. We're not. You go into the rooms, and I promise you, at least that's been my experience, no matter what I'm going through, someone else in that room will come to me after the meeting and say, you know, I've done that. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what I did. And that's the glue that binds us.
Yes.
I mean, the fellowship is...
It does lighten the load, doesn't it?
We don't have to carry it all on our own.
Mm-hmm. I could just talk to you for hours, but we're coming to the closing. Is there anything in the closing that you can think of that would be helpful for us to say and our audience to hear? There's so much, it's hard to...
There is so much. I just
narrow it. But
I would encourage anybody who's listening that if you feel like you have a problem with alcohol or drugs, get a hold of... Look up in the phone book, Alcoholics Anonymous.
Mm-hmm. And Narcotics Anonymous.
And Narcotics Anonymous. That you don't have to do it alone. You're not... There's nothing that somebody in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous hasn't done.
We're not unique.
And we need you. Mm-hmm. The fellowship can't survive if the newcomer doesn't come in. You know, I know in my tough times, you have told me when I've been on the self-pity pot, call a newcomer.
That's right.
And, you know, that's...
That's what was told to me.
I didn't want to hear that.
Yeah.
I wanted you to listen to all the reasons why I was feeling sorry for myself. And now I find myself doing that with girls that I sponsor. You know, what are you doing for your sobriety today? Or call a newcomer who's worse off than you.
Mm-hmm.
And you learn gratitude that, you know, my life isn't so bad. I've got a job. I've got two kids that I don't deserve. I've got a job. I've got a home. I've got a car. Mm. I've got friends. I still have a body, a big body that works.
No. Thanks
larger
to depressant.
Larger than I care for that still works.
No.
You know, I have so much more than I deserve. You know, thank God life isn't fair.
You know, you said that, and I think that is the most poignant way for us to close today's sharing is, thank God we didn't get what we deserved. Because
mm-hmm.
most addicts, as my friend Benny told me this morning, will suck the life right out of you.
Mm-hmm.
And we really do, the people we were in contact with in our disease.
Mm-hmm.
We suck the life out of our family
mm-hmm.
and friends.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. Thank God we didn't get what we deserve. But now that we have,
mm-hmm.
I think we deserve it because we work to keep it now and give it away.
Yes, we do. It's you know, it's a part of my life.
It is
Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't imagine my life without AA, really.
Mm. Me too.
It has...
Be a lonely life without AA in it, wouldn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Mm-hmm.
So for Radio Rehab, those of you listening, don't hesitate to call. Anybody would come and talk to you from the rooms for sure. They did us, and they will, and we will. So if you're listening, open the door. It's a good time to do it. Have that willingness Wilson's been talking about through her whole story, that willingness. What a champion for willingness. I swear we got to figure out how to bottle that up and sell it. Anyway, willingness is a good way for us to close today's discussion. Don't forget, you can always get on Radio Rehab at Facebook. You can call WEOA 424-1400. You can hear Jane on lisasifecares.net. And don't forget, between now and next week, you can see Jane and I in the rooms for sure. Her probably more than me. But if you need us, don't hesitate to call. And between now and next week, don't forget to do the next right thing.